Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nazir Daf Chof Dalid. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin at the Mishnah that you'll find the second line from the top of Daf Chof Dalet. Ho'isha Shinodra Benazir, a woman, a married woman, accepted upon herself a Nazirus vow, Vehifrisha Es Behemta, and she set aside the animals that are required for the Nazir observance. At the conclusion of Nazirus, 3 korbanos are brought, 3 sacrifices, a chatos, an oilo, and a shlomim. V'achakach hefir lo bala, and after that, her husband annulled her vow. Im shelo hoiso habehemot teitzei v'tira be'eder, if the animal that was set aside belonged to him, to the husband, and now the vow is annulled, so the animal goes free, goes to graze in the herd. Ve'im shelo hoisa beimo, and if the animal was hers, achatos tomus, the animal designated as a chatos would be set aside to die. Ve'oila tikrav oila, the ola that was set aside can be offered, even though not as a nozir, after all, he annulled her vow, but it can be offered as a voluntary or as a nidova. Tikrav ola, it's offered as a nidova. That's a non-required sacrifice. And vashlomim, tikrav shlomim. The animal that was set aside to serve as her shlomim can be offered as a shlomim. V'necholin liyom echad. A korban shlomim brought by a nozir has a 1-day time frame for eating. A standard korban shlomim is a 2-day with an intervening night time allotment. But the korban nozir, though she is not truly a nozir, the vow was absolved, but we apply to it the stringencies of a korban nozir. V'einon t'unin lechem. However, we do not require this korban shlomim to be accompanied by the 20 loaves that are characteristic of a true nazir korban shlomim. The Tosfos shlomim yikruvu shlomim v'necholim liyom echad kechomer, with the stringency of shalmei nazir. Vafilu leman domer baal. Even according to the opinion that says that when a husband absolves her of the vow is uprooted from its source. Shehi kitsham ledin shalmei nazir. Since, however, she dedicated the animals, as a shalmei nazir, it gets the restrictions of a shalmei nazir. Let's continue in the Mishnah. Hoyu lo mo'is stumin. If she had undefined monies that were set aside for the purchase of nazir sacrifices, but the money was not earmarked, namely, a part of the money for this kind of sacrifice and part of the money for that kind of sacrifice, but rather a pile of money was set aside. Rashi points this out. Mois stumen shelo pirish elu lechatz velo levelu sham harei elu yiplu davo velochem behen oilois v'abosu l'Hashem v'orus l'kohanim. So the Mishnah tells us just that, that if she had money that was not defined, and the husband annulled the vow, so the money is used for the purchase of olos, of ola-type sacrifices. The entire meat of the animal is burnt on the Mizbeach, and the skins are given to the Kohanim. Mo'os mifuroshin, if the woman had set aside money and also earmarked the money, part for the shlomim, part for the chatos, part for the ola, and the husband absolved her of the vow, demei chatos yechu liyam hamelach, lo nenin v'lo mo'alin bohen. The money that was earmarked for the purchase of a sin offering, of the nozir korban chatos, it is dispensed with by bringing it to the Dead Sea. The monies, if one were to use them for their personal benefit, there would be no mi'ilah violation. However, lonenin means they're not allowed as a first choice to use the monies for one's personal benefit. Demei oila, the monies that were earmarked for the ola sacrifice, and now the husband has absolved the vow. Yaviu oila umoyalin bohen, the money is used for the purchase of korban olos, and if one uses the money for their own personal benefit, there is a mi'ilah violation. Mi'ilah is the name of the sin involved in one's deriving personal benefit from items, things that were sanctified. Udemei shlomim, the money that she had earmarked for the purpose of the shlomim sacrifices, and now she no longer needs it, she's no longer a nazir because of her vow being absolved. Yaviu shlomim v'nechol miyom echot v'ein tunim lechem. Shlomim sacrifices nevertheless can be purchased, and they have a 1 day time frame, not a standard 2 day time frame for eating it. And the accompanying breads that a nazir would bring are not brought in this case. After all, there's no nazir. Her vow was absolved. Our Mishnah had taught that if the animals belong to the husband, so there's no sanctity upon them at all. The Gemara opens with a question, Man Tana Debarl Lo Mishtabed Lo. Who is the Tana that says that a husband is not bound to provide the wife's sacrifices? We look at Rashi across from here. Man tano de lo mishtabed lo, man hu tano de toni de kosovashim hoiso behemo shelo. Who is the tana that's of the opinion that if the animal belonged to the husband, lo chayla le kedusha klal domar teitzivatir be'eder. Our Mishnah said that if the animal belonged to the husband and he absolved her vow after she had set aside the animals for her sacrifices, so the Mishnah taught that the animal, after the absolution, goes free in and returns to the herd, and there's no sanctity whatsoever. So we're looking for the Tana, the opinion that would say that the husband is not bound, there is no sanctity, therefore, on the animal. Mishum debal lo mishabed lo lahavi kominosel klal. The husband is not bound to bring, to provide her, his wife, with her sacrifices. V'chi mafrisha lo hi l'nezirusa hare hu kimo shemaktish dov sheinu shelo dein b'dvorav klum. And the woman, having separated the animal, followed by her vow being annulled, it's like someone else, some outsider, setting aside his friend's animals as a sacrifice and sanctifying them, where there is nothing to it. It's meaningless. You can't sanctify something that's not yours. So in our Mishnah, it was stated that if the animal belonged to the husband, then there's no sanctity whatsoever. That is indicative of he, the husband, not being bound to her, bound to provide her with her sacrifices. Omar Rav Chista. You'll notice that we have a Nosei Mivneh heading on the side of the Gemara. where Roman numerals 1 and 2 appear, as they appear in the Gemara, they are Shnei Lishonos Machlokes Rav Chisda Rava, two versions of the Machlokes between Rav Chisda and Rava. The diamond is then featured, Machlokes Rav Chisda Rava, B'man Tano, who is the Tana Debalo Mishtabed Lo, that a husband is not bound, not duty bound, to provide his wife with sacrifices. Ukidigotoni, Tim HaBehemos Shifisha Hoyu Mishalo, Ve'efalo Teitzev Et Yomeder. As the Mishnah indicated, that if the animal that she set aside belonged to the husband, and then he annulled the vow, the animal goes free, having no sanctity. So now our Gemara continues. Omar Rav Chisda, Rabbonon hi. The Mishnah that mentioned that after the Hafora, if the animal was his, the animal goes back to grazing the herd amongst all his other animals. This is in accordance with the Rabbonon. The Isaka Daitach Rebbe Yehuda hi. If you were to think that it's Rebbe Yehuda who appears later in the Gemara, Amai Teitzi V'tir Be'eder. Why would he agree with the animal going free to graze in the herd? Oh, Mishtabed Lo. According to Rebbe Yehuda, the husband is bound to her, and therefore her sanctification of the sacrifices would have significance. Desanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Oda Mevi Korban Oshir Al Ishto, V'chein Kol Korban Oser Shichayves. A husband is obligated to bring the sacrifice that's characteristic of a man of means, if it's if it's a type of sacrifice that we call oilav yori, that depends on a person's income level. And the woman that this man married, his wife happens to have come from a background of impoverishment. And the sacrifice that she incurred was a sacrifice that would have been able to be purchased for little money. A meal offering, for example. The husband, though, once he marries her, has to provide her with sacrifices not based on her previous income level, but as he is now a man of means. V'chein kol korban asel shichayves, and the same applies to all sacrifices that his wife is obligated in. Shekach kosav lo, he writes in the marriage document, he writes to his wife, kol achrayas dislech olai min kavmes dino, all obligations, sacrificial obligations that you have are now upon me. And hence you see that the husband, according to Rebbe Yehuda, is duty bound to provide her with sacrifices. And that being the case, even if the behemoths were his, it would have been her right to dedicate them. And therefore, even if the husband would have annulled the vow afterwards, we wouldn't say that the animal goes scot-free and returns to graze in the herd. But rather, since she had sanctified them, the annulment of the vow doesn't undo that original sanctity that she imposed on the animals. So it would not have said, if this Mishnah were in accordance with Rebbe Yehuda, who holds the Baal, the husband, responsible, it wouldn't have said that the animals, after absolution, go back to graze in the herd. Rava Omar, Afilu Teimur Rav Yehuda. Rava is a second approach to that of Rav Chisda, and he says that the Mishnah can be understood even according to Rav Yehuda. So Rava, in saying Afilu Teimur Rav Yehuda, the Mishnah could be understood even according to Rebbe Yehuda, ki mishabed lo, when Rebbe Yehuda speaks about the husband being bound to provide his wife with sacrifices, b'milsut tzricha lo, that's only with regard to those sacrifices that she needs, b'milsut lo tzricha lo, things that she doesn't need, as is the case of a wife whose husband absolved her of the Nazir vow, she doesn't need to bring Nazir sacrifices. So the sanctification that she made, even though he was Meshubah to her in general, he's bound to her in general. Here, she set aside, she would have set aside animals that she doesn't need at all at this point. Therefore, our Mishnah that says Teitzei Betir Be'eder could be understood even according to Rabbi Yehuda. Iko di Amri, Ma'an Tana. Now we have a second version of Rav Chisda and Rava. Omar Rav Chisda, Rabbi Yehuda Hi. Our Mishnah is in accordance with Rabbi Yehuda. V'chi Mishabed La, when does Rabbi Yehuda speak about a husband being bound to his wife? B'milsa D'tzrichola, things that she needs. B'milsa D'lo Tzrichola Lo, sacrifices that she doesn't need, so the husband is not bound to provide them. And hence, in the case of a woman whose Nazirus vow was absolved, Teitzei V'tir B'eder. D'i Rabbanon, if you were to think that our Mishnah is in accordance with the Rabbanon, Lo Mishabed Lo Klal, he is not bound to provide her with sacrifices to begin with. There would be no need to teach a Mishnah which says Teitzei V'tir B'eder in accordance with the Rabbanon, when that would be so obvious. The Gemara continues with what is tantamount to an attempt to establish the Mishnah like the Rabbanon. We just got finished saying for a Mishnah to say Teitzei V'tir B'eder after he absolves her of her vows, and to have that point that the animal returns to its chulin state in accordance to the Rabbanon would be very obvious. So the Mishnah couldn't have been authored by the Rabbanon. The Gemara, though, as we said, tries to set up the Mishnah like the Rabbanon and says, V'ela hechi domi de mishabed la. Rashi. You can see Rashi three lines from the bottom. V'ela hechi domi de mishabed uboi l'ukma k'rabbanon. We want to try to set up the Mishnah like the Rabbanon. K'gon de akne ni'alo l'nezirusa. An example would be, at this point we think, that the husband had transacted a behema unto his wife for her Nazirus purposes. And then, as the Mishnah said, the husband absolved her or annulled her vow, and the Mishnah teaches the Chiddush according to the Rabbanan. In this case, even though he was makne the animal to her for her Nazirus purposes, since he absolved her of the vow, the animal goes free. So let's continue in the Gemara. We are suggesting, if you want to set up the Mishnah like the Rabbanon, we who say in general the husband is not bound to her, what would be a case where the husband would be providing her with sacrifices? So kigon de akni lo, the Gemara says. Namely, where he transacted, where he was makne, he transacted the behema unto her. The Gemara, though, rejects this. The cave of the akni law have the nafsha. Once he is makne the animal, he transacts the animals to her, it then becomes hers. Oh, if it becomes hers, and then the vow is absolved, you wouldn't say Teitzei V'tir B'eder. We said before, if it, amongst the animals there was a chatas, it would be set aside to die. Therefore, as Rashi says, you can't set up the Mishnah with its ruling that if the animals were his, they would, and then he the husband of annulled her vow, Teitzei V'tir B'eder. So, as Rav Chisda would have you believe, as he points out, the Mishnah is in accordance with the Tana Rebbe Yehuda. The Gemara continues at the top of Amud Beis. Rava Omar Afilu Tema Rabbanan. Our Mishnah that said that after the absolution of the vow, the animals go, if the animals were his, they go back to the herd. That can be understood even according to the Rabbanan. Kimakni lo nami, even when the husband did makne, did transact the bema to his wife, we thought before, when we learned Rav Chisda, if the husband had transacted it to his wife, it becomes hers totally lock, stock, and barrel, and upon absolution of the vow, the animal would not go back to being chulin. So Rava tells us, no, the Mishnah could be in accordance with the Rabbanan, and it's talking about a case where he was makne the animal to her. And if you'll ask, if he was makne her the animal to her, then how can you say upon absolution, they'd say, v'dir be'eder? I'll tell you how we can say that. Ki makni lo nami, even when the husband is makne, he transacts the animal to his wife. B'milsa d'tzrichola, he's makne animals that she will need. B'milsa d'lo tzrichola lo makni lo, animals that she doesn't need, so that he doesn't transact to her. And therefore, if he absolves her of the nazir vow, she doesn't need those animals anymore. And as a result, the Mishnah tells us, Teitzei v'tira beida, the animal goes back to grazing in the herd after the husband absolved her of the vow. The Gemara continues, and before we continue in the text, we glance at the side. We have a topic heading. HaGemara she'elis al-hadikotoni dim abeimos hoyu shelah. The Gemara will ask regarding that which we saw in the Mishnah, that if the behemoth belonged to the woman, mina la ha amrinon ma shekonsa isha kona baila. How can the Mishnah teach that if the animals were hers, where does she get the animals from? After all, there's a rule that says that whatever a woman acquires, it automatically belongs to her husband. So the entire scenario needs clarification. And let's now turn to the Gemara text. Im shelo hoisa behemta, if the animal belonged to the woman, chatos tamus v'oilo tikrav, the animal designated as a chatos would have to die. Of course, we're talking about a case of the woman after she had set aside the animals and the husband annulled her vow. So the chatos animal would be set aside to die. The oila tikrav, and the oila is offered as a korban nedava. And the Gemara asks, as we introduced before, he mina la, where do you have the situation that the animal belongs to her, that the Mishnah could say im shelo haisa? Ho amris mashikonsa isha kona baila, but we have been taught, you have said, that that which a woman acquires is automatically acquired by her husband. So what do you mean im haisa im shelo haisa, that the animals were hers? They're never hers. Everything she acquires belongs to the husband. The Gemara has two responses to this. Namely, how can the animals, or the money needed to purchase the animals, belong to the woman? Omra Papa shekamtsasa mi'isasa. Eboy, same, another approach is, da akni le acher v'yomala. We'll explain this second answer first, where some outsider gave the woman money, and v'yomala, and he said to her, I'm giving you this money, amanas she'en lebalech rishus behen, on condition that your husband has no connection to them, no rights to them, to the monies that I'm giving you. So the question was, how does a woman have anything of her own when we say manshikotsin shikotsa baila? So the Gemara has given two answers. We didn't explain Rav Papa's answer, shikomtsasa meisasa. We can say she got these monies by saving on the food allocation that a woman is entitled to. The Rashi gives as an example a case where a husband went abroad, went on a journey, and he entrusted an executor with money to provide the wife with enough money to purchase food. And the Gemara in Ksubis, Rashi quotes this, gives the amount of food a woman is entitled to eat. And therefore, there's money that's designated for her food consumption. The woman, in our case, decided to eat less than the amount that's allocated to her. So the balance, the difference between the amount she actually spent and the amount originally allocated to her, she saved up. She saved that difference. That's shekamtsosa meisosa. And with that, she bought animals. And the assumption here is that money that she saves up from the monies that were budgeted for her food purchases, she is the owner of those monies. And hence, we can learn the Mishnah as with its reference to Behemta Shalah, her animals that she purchased with these funds. Eboy Sema, another explanation of how the woman is said to be the owner of the animals, and we, on the other hand, know Mashekonsi Shekonsa by law, the Akni Lo Acher, some outsider transacted the animals to her, the Omar Law, and he says, I'm giving you these animals with a condition. Almenas She'en Lebalech Rishusbem, on condition that your husband has no rights to them. In a case like that, then the animals belong to the woman, to the married woman, with her husband having no rights to them. Ha'oila tikrav oila v'ashlamim tikrav v'chulei amalei Shmuel l'avua bar ihi. Shmuel says to Avua bar ihi, lo tesev al karoch ad de amrisli hoda milsa. Don't sit down on your, literally, don't sit down on your feet, meaning right now you're standing. So don't get off your feet to sit down until you explain to me the following. The discussion at hand will take us down to practically the end of the Omid. The following statement appears. V'elu hein arba elim she'enon te'unin lechem. The following are four cases of rams that, when offered as a sacrifice, will not require the bread, the loaves that otherwise would have been offered with it. Now that's a little vague. The Gemara here is to explain this teaching. What are the four? Shelo v'shelo, shelo achar misa, v'shelo achar kapara. There are four cases alluded to here. Now, after having enumerated them, the Gemara explains each one. Shelo hadamran, the case of a sacrifice that she brings, that we will say do not require breads, that's the case of our Mishnah, where a woman had animals of her own, set them aside for nazir sacrifices, and amongst the nazir sacrifices the korban shlomim, accompanying which are ordinarily 20 loaves, but once the husband absolves her of the vow, so the animals are no longer necessary. And as we saw, the shlomim that she'll still have to bring is brought, but without breads. She's no longer a nozir. The breads are 20 loaves that accompany a nozir korban shlomim. Shelo. In the list of points that was mentioned, there was a case of shelo that doesn't require bread. What does that mean? This not. Ho'ish madir es beno benozir. V'ein ho'ish madir es beno benozir. There's a halacha l'moshe misinai, an oral tradition, that an oral teaching that goes back to Sinai, that a father has the right to impose on his son nazirus. So that if a father deems it important to impose nazirus on his son, he can do just that. This right or power is something only a father has, as the source goes on to say, "Vein ha'isha maderes es benazir." A mother is not able to do that. According to this oral tradition, there is a right for relatives to protest this Nazirus. This Nazirus that the son had to observe because the father imposed it on him. So as we said, there's a halacha Moshe Sinai that there's a macho possibility and a chance to protest it. Ketzad, gilach o shegiluchu krovim. The boy, the nazir, shaved himself, or relatives came and shaved him. Micha o shemichu krovim. He protested the nazirus, or relatives protested their relative being a nazir by virtue of the imposition of the father. Well, with that having been done, the protesting of the nazirus, there's no more nazirus on that ben. Hoyu lo mois stumin. If there had been monies set aside for the purchase of sacrifices that would have been brought upon the culmination of his nazirus, so in our case we have mois stumin, undefined monies. Yiplu linedava. The monies are then to be used to purchase voluntary type sacrifices that will be offered on the Mizbeach. Mois mefurashin, if there had been designated monies, the mechatas yechu liyam hamelach. And we add to this lo nenin v'lo molin, the monies that have been earmarked for the chatas, now that they're not necessary, those monies are to be sent to the Dead Sea, where they will corrode into non-existence. And we add regarding that, regarding these monies, that that no one is allowed to benefit from them, but yet if one does, they won't be guilty of me'ila. Demei oila, what about the monies that were earmarked for an ola? Again, we're talking about monies that were designated for the son's sacrifices. We're talking about the son who was imposed with Nazirus, but his relatives subsequently protested. So as far as the demay, the money that was designated for the Ola, Yaviu Ola Umoilin Bohen. Ola sacrifices are brought anyway. They're not going to be Nazir Ola sacrifices, but Ola type sacrifices are brought, and the money is subject to Mi'ila if you use it for personal benefit. Demei shlomim, yaviu shlomim, v'necholim liyom echad, v'einon te'unin lechem. The monies that this that had been designated for this son's nazir sacrifices, so those monies designated for the shlomim are used to buy shlomim. And necholim liyom echad, you have one day in which to consume the meat, and the Einon Tunin Lechem. This is really the main reason this source was brought in, and we dashed underline this, the Einon Tunin Lechem. There's no need for bringing the loaves of that are generally brought with the Shlomim of a Nazir. Why is there no need? Because there is no Nazirus. Because the relatives had protested the Nazirus being imposed on their relative. Shela'achar Misa, this is the third in the list of four Elim rams that do not require the bread. The Tanaic source explains, we say Shela'achar Misa Minolon Desanya Hamafrish Mois L'Nazirusa. Person set aside money for his Nazirus Korbanus, and the monies are undefined. Lo nenin v'lo molin bohen. One is not to benefit from them personally, but there's no mi'ila if one did benefit from them. Why is there no mi'ila? V'pnei shehem ru'uyin lahavi b'kulon shlomim. All of the monies could have been used for the purpose of the Nazir Shlomim Korban. The rule concerning Mi'ilah states that there is no Mi'ilah violation if one derives personal benefit from Kodshim Kalim, from low-level sanctity. There is Mi'ilah if one derives personal benefit from Kodshei Kodshim. Kodshei Kodshim is the Ola, the Chatos. So we're saying now that since the monies were undefined, they potentially could have been used to purchase exclusively Shlomim, which does not carry with it a Mi'ilah penalty. Mace v'hoyu lo mo'os stumin yiblu l'nedava. If the fellow who was a Nazir died and he had left undefined monies, the monies are used to purchase olos, which are used for the Mizbeach during the Mizbeach's downtime. These are called olos l'keitz ha-Mizbeach. And that's what the term nedava is a reference to. Nedava implies a voluntary type sacrifice, and that's in contrast to a sacrifice that one has a specific obligation to bring. Mo'os mefuroshin, this individual died, he did so leaving defined monies. In other words, the money was earmarked for the respective Nazir sacrifices. Now what do you do with this cash? Demei chatos, the money that was earmarked for the chatos, for the sin offering, yolich liyam hamelach, lo nenin velo molin. The money is brought to the Dead Sea. There is no personal benefit that you should attempt to derive from them. But if you did, there would be no mi'ilah. Demei ola, yoviu oila. The defined ola cash is to be used for the purchase of ola sacrifices. Umoralin bohen. There is mi'ilah that is violated if one derives personal benefit from the cash designated for the ola. Demei shlomim, yoviu shlomim. V'necholim liyoyim echad v'einon teunin lechem. And here you see we've dashed, underlined v'einon teunin lechem. This is the reason for bringing in this source, because we were looking for the case of einon teunin lechem as is relevant to la'achar misa. And here we have that very case of the individual dying, leaving earmarked monies for korban shlomim. So shlomim sacrifices can be purchased, but the Nazir 20 loaves will not be brought along with it. The Nazir is no longer here. Shel Achar Kapora, Savarahu. The case of Achar Kapora and the idea of Einon Tunin Lechem follows from logic. Now, just let us mention, Achar Kapora involves a situation of someone having set aside money or a sacrifice for his needs, and they got lost, and he purchased his needs with replacement funds, and then found the original funds. And that is what Achar Kapora is referring to here. What happens with the funds that were set aside that he now doesn't need because he accomplished his requirements through replacement funds? So we say as follows. The rule applying to Achar Kapora, Achar Kapora literally means after he received atonement. And as we explained, he purchased his needs through replacement funds and thereby fulfilling his obligations. Now he finds the original. So the Gemara explains, Shela Achar Misa my tam. We saw before the case of Achar Misa, monies that had been earmarked for Shlomim, but the owner died. So Shlomim were brought, but no bread is brought, because there's no Nazir anymore. So we continue here. We said by Achar Misa, why is it the Lo Chazir L'Chapora? It's not fit for atoning anymore. It's not fit to be brought as a nazir sacrifice, and that's why there's no more bread requirement. A shlomim that is being brought but not for a nazir doesn't have a bread accompaniment. So just like in the case of Lachar Misa, where the nazir himself died, the shlomim is brought without its accompanying loaves. Shalachar kapora nami holo chazilu kapora. Likewise, in the case where the nazir fulfilled his requirements with replacement funds, these funds are no longer necessary. And since they're no longer necessary as a nazir sacrifice, the shlomim that will be brought without loaves. Loaves, as we said, are brought only as part of a nazir shlomim. The Gemara asks, Vesu leka, are there no other examples of Einon Teunin Lechem? Vo'ika de Tani Levi? You have that which is featured in the following Tanaic source taught by Levi. And it says, Usha'ar kol shalmei nazir, sheshachtan shelo kimitzvasan. The shlomim sacrifices brought by a nazir that were slaughtered without the, we'll say, the proper intention. The Rashi explains, Sheshachtan shelok mitzvason, the mitzvason, he, lahavi ben shtei shonim, the proper way of bringing the shalmei nazir is to bring an animal, a ram that's 2 years old. And he brought one that's 1 year old, or he shechted the shalmei nazir with the kavona of another, with the intent that it would be a korban todah. So shalmei nazir that were slaughtered shelo kimitzvasan, in an improper fashion, as we already explained. Ksherim, the sacrifice is kosher, v'lo'olin l'baylin l'shum choiva. However, the nazir who needs to bring a korban shlomim will not fulfill his shlomim requirement with a shlomim that was slaughtered shelo kimitzvasan. V'necholim l'yom echad, there's one day in which to eat these shlomim. V'einon t'unin lo lechem v'lo zroa. And here we dashed underline the main point. A shalmei nazir that is shechted improperly, and we explained either it was a one-year-old animal instead of a two-year-old animal, or he had in mind a different kind of korban when he slaughtered it. It's, as we say, kosher, but the nazir loaves, the bread loaves, are not going to be brought. And lo zroa, we'll see more later about this. The zroa is the forearm of the animal, is in the case of a shalmei nazir cooked together with the rest of the shlomim. That requirement would not apply over here. So we have an additional case. Not just, we said there were four cases of shalmei nazir that will not have the accompanying loaves. Here you have a fifth case, a case named Shoftan Shalokim Itzvasan. The Gemara responds, the list above that spoke about four, Kimitzvasan Kachashiv. There are only four cases where things are done, we'll say, properly, meaning there's no violation in the above mentioned four cases. Shalokim Itzvasan Lo Kachashiv. An example of something that's done improperly, resulting in waiving the lechem requirement, that's not what we were interested in creating. We were not interested in that when we stated the list above. So that as far as shlomim that are part of a scenario that we can call kimitzvasan, there are only four examples that will result in kimitzvasan, but ein teunin lechem. If you want to introduce cases that are shelo kimitzvasan, so okay, then we'll have an additional example of einon teunin lechem. Before we conclude Let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.